All right, we are thrilled that you are here this morning. If you are joining us live and in person, if you are with us on Facebook Live, if you're listening to the radio, thank you for being part of our worship service this morning. And hopefully as we continue, we can encourage you with a word from God. One thing we want to remind you of, and Tim has already mentioned it, but classes will resume at least in a smaller format next week. So next Sunday, if you are an adult, you will be in this room. We'll kind of scatter out, and I'll be teaching that class. If you are a teenager, you will be in the couch room. I kind of tried to fight Thomas about us getting the couch room and the teens getting the auditorium. But the teens will be with Thomas in the couch room, and Journeyland will be on the back side of the building. We're not going to run little kids yet. Now, I know that may put some of you who've got elementary age kids and little below elementary age kids in your same family in a predicament, but let us know if we can help out in some form or fashion. But Journeyland will run over this wing here, and we'll look forward to that starting next week. We're going to keep Wednesday just like we are for now, kind of a 30, 35, 40 minute devotional that'll also be on Facebook Live, so join us when you can in person, and certainly join us through Facebook Live. Okay, when I was 7 years old, the Dallas pretend I'm Michael for a second. I'm going to tell a Dallas Cowboys story for about 2 seconds, and then I'm going to switch. When I was 7 years old, the Dallas Cowboys had this old man named Craig Morton, who was their quarterback. Anybody remember Craig Morton? Okay, so we got a few old-timers like me. Well, they drafted this kid named Roger Staubach, and they kind of went back and forth, and they literally go back and forth playing a series, and the Cowboys and Coach Landry decided that the young guy was way better than the old guy. So they sent the old guy to my team when I was a little kid. So the old guy went to the Denver Broncos, and he took the Broncos all the way to the Super Bowl, where he lost to Roger Staubach. But that's a different story. But I remember loving this quarterback. He wore number 7, and he was this kind of cowboy, not Dallas cowboy, but kind of Texas cowboy kind of guy, and I loved to hear him talk. And every time they interviewed him, they'd interview him with his helmet on. And so I'd get in the front yard, and I was Craig Morton, and I would rear back, and I'd throw that ball, and we lived in a 3-story apartment, and I would throw the ball up onto the 3rd story. I'm sure the people who lived on the 3rd floor loved it. And then when the ball hit the wall, then I went from Craig Morton to Haven Moses. None of you probably know who Haven Moses is. That was the wide receiver that Morton always threw the ball. And I would do my own Eminem connection, and I'd throw that ball, and I'd catch it, and I'd do my little dance, because Craig Morton didn't dance, but Haven Moses did, so I just danced on Facebook Live, that's bad. And I just knew that one day I was going to be either the next Craig Morton or the next Haven Moses. About a year later, I was heartbroken. He took off his helmet to be interviewed, and he had less hair than I do, and it was like, my favorite guy is an old man. But that's how I thought success was defined. I got to be a sophomore in college and went to a preaching seminar, and in the midst of that preaching seminar, as I decided that that point in my life, I wanted to do what I do now for the rest of my life, that I heard a preacher by the name of Prentice Menor, who was out of the Metroplex, who to me at that point was the greatest preacher I'd ever heard in my life, and he stood up in front of this group of college kids that were all studying to be preachers, and he talked about the power of the sermon and the power of the message of the Lord that is given through the vessel of man, and I sat there and I listened to this guy tell these stories and weave scripture in and out in such a beautiful way that I said, this is who I want to be when I grow up. And I thought, if I could ever be as good of a preacher as Prentice, then I would be successful. The truth is becoming Craig Morton, or becoming Prentice Menor, wouldn't have made me a great success. It wouldn't have meant I was the greatest in the profession. It wouldn't have meant I had made the world a better place. But I still wanted to be successful. And my guess is you are the same way. You didn't start your career when you were 22 or 25 or whenever you started it to be mediocre. You wanted to be the best. If you ran a grocery store, you wanted it to be the best grocery store in town. If you were a school teacher, you wanted to be the best school teacher in town. If you were a nurse, you wanted excellence, and you wanted every doctor there to say, that's the nurse I want. If you ran a daycare, you wanted your daycare, and you can fill in every other blank that you want to fill in. We all started our careers wanting to be successful. but yet success is kind of strange. The Bible talks about success in some unique ways, and I want us to wrestle with that a little bit. But let's start, before we see positive sides of it, let's look at some myths. One of the myths is that success confers greatness. That if we're going to define success as me being great, then we've got maybe a little bit different problem. I think I can be successful in the world without being the greatest, because we all want our lives to matter. Every day when I get up in the morning, one of the prayers I pray is, God, may my life make a difference today. May the things I say and the things I do and the people I come in contact with, may those things matter to the world that I live in. But yet the world says we got to be great. The world says we got to be Patrick Mahomes, or the world says we got to be Bill Gates, or the world says we've got to be some important person, figure in the world. But the truth is great at and greatness are not the same. We can be great at who we are, in our place, at what we do, and make the world a far better place. See, the problem with greatness is kind of threefold. First, for most of us, it's unattainable. I'm never going to be the greatest preacher in the world. Now, I like to think in my own mind at 10 o'clock at night, I'm the greatest preacher in the world. But the truth is, I've heard a few, in fact, we've had some stand up here that were way better than I was. It's also unsustainable. The truth is, even if I was the greatest preacher in the world, someday some young kid is going to come and he's going to be better than me, and I'm not going to be able to sustain my greatness. But oftentimes, it's unsatisfying. We look at those who are great, and you know, I like to watch biographies sometimes, and you'll watch these biographies of kind of these great famous people, and so many of them are miserable. They might be the greatest at whatever it is they do. Maybe they're attorneys, or maybe they're in Microsoft world, and they're in all of these other avenues where the world looks at them and says, they are the best, but yet they are unsatisfied, and sometimes even miserable. So we need to realize that greatness and success don't necessarily go together. But the second myth about success is that Jesus condemns it. We often think, and we're going to read a line from one of the stories of Jesus, that Jesus doesn't want his people to be great. But I don't think God created us to long for mediocrity. See, within that is if we say Jesus doesn't want us to be great, then what he says is Jesus just wants us to be average, and Jesus wants just to kind of float along in the stream. And I don't see Jesus saying that at all. What I do see is Jesus defining greatness different. And I think that's what we need to realize. I want you to be great. And I want you to be successful. I want you to give your life to a purpose that says, here's what matters, and to do it to the best of your ability. And I don't believe that's wrong for us to do that, whether it's professionally, or whether it's in our families, or whether it's with our God. But I also want us to define greatness a different way. In Mark chapter 10, in the context of James and John, kind of fussing with, again, I see everything kind of in a movie. I see James and John fussing with the others, and I kind of think James and John are saying, we're better than you because, and they start listing the reasons. From what I can gather, James and John were probably the most educated of the 12, and my guess is they kind of flaunted that a little bit. And so James and John are going to say, we want to be at your right hand when you get to heaven. And Jesus is going to say, not so with you. Instead, whoever wants to become great among you must be your servant. And whoever wants to be first must be slave of all. For even the Son of Man did not come to be served, but to serve, and to give his life as a ransom for many. Now notice, Jesus didn't look at James and John saying, why do you guys want to be great, and just roast them and say, you just need to be mediocre. Instead, he just redefined what greatness was. In their mind, greatness was, we are your right and your left. We are in co-command with you. We are the vice president, so to speak. And Jesus said, it's not necessarily about that. It's about serving, and it's about loving those around. Years ago, I came across a sociology story that I found fascinating. It was an essay that was eventually written by by Robert Roberts, and his essay was called The Balloon Stomp. And we've done this activity with our teenagers. And so let me describe the activity. You take every kid and you tie a balloon to his ankle and you say, go. And the object of the game is you run and you stomp out everybody else's balloon, and whoever's balloon stays unpopped, the last balloon unpopped is the winner. And Diona gives them, you know, a fun dip prize. He tried this out. And so he gets a bunch of fourth graders together, and they just go nuts, and they're knocking each other down, and they're pushing and they're shoving, and they're popping balloons, and one kid has, you know, slid a pencil into his pocket, and he's popping balloons with his pencil. That would have been me. But at the end of that, you had one winner who was victorious, bragging to everybody, kind of like Texas Tech did at 3 minutes left. You had one winner saying, we got this. I'm sorry, all of my Texas Tech friends. The victor. And then he decided he would go to the class down the hall. Now, the class down the hall was what we would now call a special needs class. And so he plays the same game. He ties balloons to every kid, and every kid he tells the rules to, and all the kids say, oh, this sounds great. And here's what happens. They helped each other. So in the one class, you had the kid running around with the pencil and knocking over all the little girls so we could pop their balloons. And in the other class, you had one kid who'd hold up his balloon and saying, you pop my balloon and then I'll pop your balloon. And there was a totally different way of keeping score. I think that's how we need to look at our world. The world is going to define success totally different than Jesus does. Okay, here's how the world is going to define success. What neighborhood do you live in? Do you live in a good neighborhood, or do you live in a so-so neighborhood, or do you live across the tracks? And what kind of car do you drive? Is your car new? Is your car new used? Are you driving your dad's car that he sold you because he got something better, or are you just driving the clunker that blows black smoke out the tailpipe? And they're going to say, is your success based upon your education? Do you have a GED or do you have a PhD? And they're going to say, is your success based on how many bank accounts you have and how much money you carry in your pocket? See, the two groups in the Roberts story had completely different ways of scoring things. And I think we need to have a different way of scoring things as well. Because success is not going to be defined by the kind of car I drive. Success is not going to be defined by the neighborhood I live in or how many square feet my house is. And success isn't going to be defined about my position and role within a company or an organization. And it's not going to be defined by what the world says when they say, he's won this award and that award. Instead, it's going to be totally different. So let's look at Luke chapter 16, 12, verse 16, and see about our scoring system. Jesus told them a parable. The ground of a certain rich man yielded an abundant harvest. And he thought to himself, what shall I do? I have no place to store all of my crops. And then Jesus said, this is what I'll do. I'll tear down my barns and I'll build bigger ones. And there I will store my surplus grain. And I'll say to myself, you have plenty of grain laid up for many years. Take life easy. Eat, drink, and be merry. But God said to him, you fool, this very night your life will be demanded from you. And then who will get what you have prepared for yourself? Okay, let's use that text to talk about how we're going to keep score. Okay, now the world's going to see that story and say, what a successful farmer. I mean, we've got some farmers and ranchers in here. If you were able to do so well that you filled up your barn full of stuff, the world would say, what a great farmer that guy is. And if your cows produced so many cows that were so big and so perfect for meat, and they would look at you, like, Mr. Eldridge, if you had the greatest crop of cows, do you have a crop of cows? Herds of cows. I like crops of cows. I think that's funnier. But if the Eldridges had the greatest crop of cows, I can't even say it right. If they had the greatest cows the world ever seen and the fanciest restaurants want the Eldridges cows, and the world would look at the Eldridges and say, they've got the greatest cows ever, would that be success? Or would we define success a different way? See, I think Jesus, through the Gospels, is going to say a couple things about how we keep score. The first thing I think he says about how we keep score is that we've got to be rich toward God. See, the sum total of a person's life, in a sense, is going to be burned up. And if all of that is burned up, are they really a success? A couple of months ago, Nikki had forwarded me an obituary was an obituary of someone who lived in another town who was a client of the bank, and she forwards me this obituary, and I start reading it. And her comment was, check this obituary out. And I start reading this obituary, and it tells about all of his jobs and all of his successes and all of the boards that he served on and all of the various things. And you're reading this, and you're thinking, what a great man, and look at all he's done. There was never a mention of family. There was never a mention of friends. There was never a mention of a church or of God. And I kept reading that thinking, is that really success? I mean, his obituary on paper looked great. He was this, and he was this, and he was this, and he was president of this organization, and he did this, and he was involved in all of these countless activities, and he made more money than he could probably count at a given point. But yet at the end of his life, there was no, please remember his wife, or remember his child, or remember his friends, or ask his God for help. Jesus says in Matthew chapter 6, do not store up for yourselves treasures on earth where moth and rust destroy, where thieves break in and steal, but store up for yourselves treasures in heaven where moth and rust do not destroy, where thieves do not break in and steal, for where your treasure is, there your heart will be also. The question I want you to ask yourself this morning is, what can we do that will continue on? I mean, if I live to be 70 or 75 or 80, maybe I even get to 100, all of those possessions I have, they're not going to continue on. But what's going to continue on? I would think that would be successful. Those moments of worship, those moments when we've worked on our character, those moments when we've sacrificed our money and time, those moments when we put everything down to help somebody, those moments where we said, here's what really matters, is it matters when I do this and this and this. That's going to be what holds on past our lives. Because the only score that matters is the one that God gives. And when I think about the score God's going to give me, and that kind of sounds like a weird phrase, I don't think he's going to base it upon what car I drive, and he's not going to base it upon how much money I make, and he's not going to base it upon any kind of worldly stature. He's going to base it on, is your heart rich toward me? And the second thing I think he's going to base it on is it rich toward people? Okay, some group of people come to Jesus, and they say, what's the greatest commandment? And my guess is, here's what they want Jesus to do. Okay, we got the big 10, Jesus. You tell us which of the big 10 is the most important. Let's figure out what the greatest one is, so we make sure we keep that one. And Jesus says, you asked for one, but let me give you two. And then he keeps going like this. Hearing that Jesus had silenced the Sadducees, the Pharisees got together, and one of them, an expert, said, I've already gotten this part. What's the greatest commandment? Let's go to the next screen. And Jesus replied, love the Lord your God with all your heart, with all your soul, with all your mind. This is the first and greatest commandment. Oddly enough, that gets the first four out of the big 10. And then the second is like this, love your neighbor as yourself, and all the law and the prophets hang on these two commandments. Oddly enough, that gets 4 through 10. Man comes to Jesus, give me one. I want to make sure I get one right. And Jesus said, I'll give you two. Love God with all you got, and you love the people that God has created with all you've got as well. That's success. Okay. One of the reasons I'm a preacher and not a quarterback is because of the preacher in Golden, Colorado. Same 7-year-old boy ran through those places, probably throwing a Nerf football in that place too. Kids were unruly in the 70s, just like they're unruly now. And that preacher would grab me, he'd do like David does with some of our kids, he'd grab me and he'd swing me and he'd say, Doug, you're going to be a great servant in the kingdom. To this day, everything that Mr. Cantor ever told that 7 and then 8 and then 9 and then 10 and then 11-year-old boy is stuck. In fact, it was Mr. Cantor that said, you can't be the song leader, why don't you be the preacher? And again, he had motives, but that's okay. We got to be rich toward people. And it doesn't matter if it's those little kids that are running around our feet. And it doesn't matter if it's that neighbor that gets on our nerves. And it It doesn't matter if it's those people at work. It doesn't matter what's going on. What we've got to figure out is if we're going to be truly successful, it can't just be defined by the way American dream defines it. It's got to be defined by the way God dreams it. And the way God dreams it is I look all over his world and I find those that need to be helped. Mark chapter 9, Jesus tells this story. They came to Capernaum. When he was in the house, he asked them, "What are you arguing about on the road?" But they kept quiet because on the way they were arguing about who was the greatest. My guess is this is just a retelling of the James and John story. But sitting down, Jesus called the 12 and said, "If anyone wants to be first, he must be last, and he must be the servant of all." See, there's greatness. Greatness is defined not when I can look out at the world and say, "I am the best." Greatness is defined when I look out at you and say, "You are more important than I am." See, every day, every one of us has opportunities for greatness. We all know the story of the Good Samaritan told in Luke chapter 10. And in the midst of that Good Samaritan, I kind of think he's the Great Samaritan. I don't know what he did for a living. All I know is he's more than just good. Because he sees the guy that's in the road, and he takes the guy who's in the road, who's really on the side of the road, and has the snot beat out of him, and he loads him on his donkey, and he gets him taken care of, and he does the right thing. And that needs to be us. We need the people who do the right thing. Who find those people who are on the side of the road, whether spiritually or literally or figuratively or whatever ways we want to imagine, and say, "Here is who we are, let's define success by doing it the way God wants us to do." Because that's what Jesus did. I mean, Jesus comes and he is Son of God who can do the miraculous. He could have done a few little things and the world would have elevated him above any other spot on the planet. But yet he chose to serve. And 20 years after Jesus dies on the cross and ascends to heaven, Paul is going to write this in Philippians 2. He's going to say, "Your attitude should be the same as that of Christ Jesus, who being in the very nature of God, did not consider equality with God to be grasped, but he made himself nothing, taking the very nature of a servant and being made in human likeness, and being found in appearance as a man, he humbled himself and became obedient to death, even death on the cross." And I think what Paul is saying in that great passage that we know so well is here's who we ought to be like. One who was willing to give up everything for those he knew, for those he didn't. And he humbled himself before God. I told Tim I wasn't going to talk about this in the sermon, but I'm going to do it anyway. The last couple of months, I've been, when you hit 50, that's a kind of a weird age. Some of you have been there. Some of you have been there twice from what you tell me. When you hit 50, you start kind of reflecting on all those things that you've done in your life. And you look and you think, "Was I really successful?" And the bottom line is I could have gone up a ladder. I could have gone from this church to a bigger church, and by now I could have gone to a bigger church again. Maybe. And that might have made me successful in the eyes of the people who taught me. And that might have made me successful in the eyes of preacher circles. But I'm not sure if that would have made me successful in the eyes of God. I've seen a whole lot of people in my business and in a lot of other businesses who passed Jesus right up the ladder. And they're going from job to job to job. And as they are promoting themselves up, they totally bypass Jesus. They might be the president of the biggest company in the world. That doesn't make them successful. Okay, so define your success differently. Keep score differently. Do your best at everything you ever do. Give God the credit, and then serve him with all you got. And I think that's the call of Jesus to a couple of boys on the road who's saying, "Can we be right and left?" And I think that's his call to us 2,000 years later. All right, Kent's got a song that he's chosen. If you need our help in any way, I tell you, Michael will be at the front and I'd be at the back, but we got a one-man gang right now, so I'll be back at those doors. If you need me, find me. Elders are going to be at every door as you're going out. And the best church I know is here. So if you need their help, ask them for help. So if you need something, let us know as we stand and sing. Kent.